You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, February 25th, 2018. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time over at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and our good friends now over at The Grueling Truth, which is also available on the iHeart Radio Network. I'm pretty much everywhere where you can find a podcast. I'm working on being those places where I'm not. Hope everybody's doing well on this Sunday. Mets with a spring training victory. The games are underway. And I think we have a pretty cool show ahead for you as Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post, he's down in Florida, will join me in just a little bit. Mike's been writing a little bit about the pace of play and the changes made at baseball, how he believes Yoenis Cespedes and Noah Syndergaard are a couple of big pieces that the Mets essentially have to be anchored by. And he even got into a little bit about owning the town, which I personally believe is kind of a wasted argument, but always makes for good debate, especially when you're not in the season and you're preparing for the season, and there's tons of other things going on, and maybe when there's those slow times, those are the kind of baseball debates you have. But anyway, another week of spring training in the books, and we just came off our call-in show, and I thought it went really well. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and had some cool feedback over on Twitter. Of course, you could always go to Twitter at Mike Silva Media and find out about the next show, what's going on, what am I talking about, all those things. So what are we really focused on before we get to Mike? A couple of things I just want to point out. Let's start off with the obvious and with the Mets. And if you didn't think that things are different with this 2018 Mets team under Mickey Callaway and Dave Island this week, and yes, I know what some of the skeptics are saying, that the Mets are really playing this up. This Callaway is the new age manager, how things are different. It's amazing how all the things that I talked about the last couple of years on this program, and really going back to the beginning of Collins' tenure, are things that are being accentuated and focused on with the media on this Mets team. Accountability, attention to detail, preparation. I mean, things that I personally do not believe this team has been good at for a really, really, really long time. Maybe it's as far back as 10 years, maybe longer. And the fact that this is the theme of the camp is really fundamental ABCs. But I said this last week. I'll continue to say this. I'll say this till I'm blue in the face, and you guys can turn the podcast off and say, heard enough of it, Mike. But if Callaway could come in with the theme of accountability, preparedness, attention to detail, focus. I really believe this group will maximize its results, which may not be the results that lead to a division title or deep playoff run, but I do believe it will maximize its results to the highest level. I do not believe this group has done that to date, and I really know that you could throw out the 2015 season. I'm not quite sure that that group maximized its results because it did not win a championship, and I think they should have. So anyway, you saw it in person live. Dom Smith late on Friday. Mets basically said you're not playing. And if Dom Smith doesn't get an alarm clock at this point, I love how he said the following day, hey, you know, I was up all night waiting to get to the ballpark. Well, Dom, if it's this much of a struggle at this point, it's only going to get harder. It's going to get harder when you're in the grind of August and you're in the middle of a pennant race and you've played 2 weeks straight without a day off. And, you know, you got to get yourself going for a day game after a very late night game. So I'm not really impressed that Dom Smith learned his lesson. We saw this a couple of years back, actually, the year the Mets went to the World Series. What was it? Bobby Parnell and David Wright throwing Noah Syndergaard's lunch out when he went into the clubhouse in the middle of a spring training game. Wasn't really interested in watching the game, which is something that was brought up also by Callaway and Island about how they want the pitchers on the bench focused on the game, focused on the opposing team's hitters. I mean, it's always, and I know that it's a long season and players are going to go in and out of the clubhouse and kind of do their thing. It's impossible for the players to sit on the bench and look at the game like you or I would sitting on our couch. I mean, even while we're sitting on the couch, as this being entertainment or reporting or whatever you're doing with it, you're going to flick the channel, you're going to get up, you're going to turn your attention to a conversation. That's not the point. The point is you're being engaged and involved on a consistent basis. And setting the tone of accountability with Dom Smith is exactly what Mickey Callaway needed to do. And I'll tell you what, I know everybody's been talking about Dom Smith's weight. I know he's always been a topic of conversation. I know that there's always been questions about him since he was drafted. It goes back, and I hope I'm absolutely wrong, and I hope this guy goes out and in short order hits 30 home runs, plays near gold glove defense, and makes you think that, hey, how can you ever have doubted him? He wouldn't have been the first prospect to get off to a rough start or have questions about their makeup or their performance on the field, but it just doesn't feel right. And here's the good news. Here's how I would put it. Dom Smith may be the quote-unquote heir apparent to first base. He may be high on the prospect lists, but the way I look at it, this is Adrian Gonzalez's job to lose. You pretty much have that feeling. And Adrian Gonzalez is a veteran. He's a guy with over 300 home runs. He's a guy that was an all-star just a couple of years ago. He's a guy that certainly knows how to play this game. And maybe he only has a quarter of a tank left, but if that quarter of a tank is enough to produce at a decent level to be, I'm not saying an all-star, but a very solid Major League third baseman, I think he's going to be first baseman. I think he's going to be the first baseman this year. And here's the other part. There's a guy named Peter Alonso that started in place of Dom Smith on Friday, and he's got a little bit of pop. Now, he may not be the defensive player that Smith is, and there's a lot of questions about that, but if Dom Smith thought he was just going to waltz in and get this position because he was a number one draft pick 5 years ago, and I've had this feeling that there is a certain amount, and you heard it a little bit when Zach Wheeler heard about the Jason Vargas signing, a scholarship mentality like, hey, this is my position. It's here for me. It'll be there for me when I finally figure it out. That's just not the case, and it cannot be the case. It just cannot be the case. So you really saw, again, the whole the dopey Donald Trump Jr. controversy, check mark. Callaway deflected it, swatted it away. Dom Smith shows up late. Could be the first controversy in the new regime's era. Check mark. Did the right thing. There shouldn't be any discussion. This should be the manager's call. This should be straight the manager's call. It's not Jay Horowitz's call. It shouldn't be PR getting involved and trying to cover it up. It shouldn't be Fred Wilpon's call. It shouldn't be Jeff Wilpon's call. It shouldn't be Sandy Alderson's call. It shouldn't be John Rico's call. This is the stuff that's the manager's call. And I don't want to hear all the people saying, well, it's the middle manager. All the manager does is disseminate the message from the front office. Nonsense. This is the kind of stuff that a field manager, pitching coach, You hire these guys to manage the personnel. Yes, there's a theme and a philosophy that should align based on the person that you hire with the front office philosophy. They all should be in sync. That's why you hire the right person. That's why when the owner for the last 7 years has been enforcing a person or an individual that was not necessarily who the front office wanted, it's a problem. And that's why you had a problem the last couple of years with Terry Collins. So to me, that is number one, the story from this week, and a really good thing that comes out of it. Now, the other part about this is it going to be all peaches and roses and ice cream throughout the year for Mickey Callaway? No. But you have a manager across the way, and I have to tell you, this is where the Yankees actually connect with the Mets. And the Yankees could help the Mets, and here's why. The New York Post is already running some kind of contest trying to name this new age Yankees Murderers Row lineup. And if I'm a Yankees fan, I know this isn't a Yankee show, and I like to poke at the self-importance of the Yankees fan, their organization, and all that stuff, because it's just so easy. It's just so nauseating. But if this is where you're at before they have scored a single regular season run, that you're nicknaming a lineup and an offense that hasn't done a darn thing. I remember 5 years ago how the New York Giants were supposed to be an historically great offense with Eli Manning when Bob McAdoo took over. And that never happened, or it might have been right before Bob McAdoo took over. It was around that time where you were looking at all the components and the pieces. Oh, they're going to be an historically great offense. Doesn't happen. Sometimes this historically great, quote-unquote, offense stuff or historically great pitching, talking about the Mets, doesn't happen. How about they just be, and I'm going to just keep quoting Mickey Callaway on this, and I heard Aaron Boone say this as well, the best version of what they're supposed to be. I remember they always, Sports Illustrated always has these covers, you know, the greatest pitcher ever. I think they did it with Greg Maddux back in the early 90s. And certainly Greg Maddux was a really good pitcher. Was he the greatest pitcher ever? No, I don't think so. So sometimes that goes overboard. Where that plays into helping the Mets is it takes a little bit of the pressure off of a Callaway. And you saw Steven Matz mention this. There was an article by Kevin Kernan of the Post. He talked to Dave Island, and Dave Island basically said he thinks this is the MLB's best staff in all the league. Glad that he's putting the chips to the center of the table. I like that. I like how this group off the bat, this management team, they're not hemming and hawing. They're not saying, well, this is good, but if that. Look, you guys want to be great. You guys want to live up to the hype. You guys want to be the big men on campus. You guys have to put the chips to the center of the table, not halfway. And he talks about that, but cautioning also that, hey, they have a lot to prove. They have to stay healthy. And Steven Matz even talked about, well, this is a nice position to be in. Nobody is picking them to win. Nobody thinks they're going to get healthy. Everybody thinks if they stay healthy, that it'll be an outlier. So now they could sneak in and do their thing and let everybody doubt them. And sometimes that's not a bad position to be in. Think about it. That's pretty much the position they were in 2015. And they did not handle, since that day, they did not handle success or leverage success very well. And you see, what you really have to like about this camp so far, it's about preparation, it's about work, it's about meat and potatoes baseball. No horses, no cars, no bear crunches or bear lifts in the weightlifting room, no covers. I don't want any Sports Illustrated covers. I don't want any hype. Hell, if ESPN or SI or MLB Network doesn't want to spend any time talking about the New York Mets, that's okay. Because you know what? Let them hang out in Houston camp. Let them go hang out down in Tampa with the Yankees. Let them go and talk to the Dodgers out in Arizona. Let them go follow the Cubs like they're always going to do. Let them go hype, whoever, the Brewers. You know, now you hear about how the Phillies are so improved, and maybe they'll get Jake Arrieta. Maybe they could do, hype about that. Let them do that. All this organization, all this coaching staff, all this manager, all this pitching coach has to do is go out there and work and win. And when the pressure is on the Yankees, and this is the point I'm trying to make here, let the Mets fly under the radar. Because if the Mets get off to a little bit of a rough start, all the attention is going to be on the Yankees. Let that shadow, that little brother syndrome that drives every Mets fan nuts, let that be sort of a good thing for the organization to fly under and do their thing. because you don't necessarily want, and this will happen. You're already seeing it with, you know, the injury report that the organization sends out every day. You know, there's plantar fasciitis of Bruce, and Lagares has a little bit of a tweaked hamstring. Look, you can't freak out over every injury. The organization has made a conscious effort to be transparent about the injuries because of miscommunication or maybe the media misreporting it and everybody going, you know, berserk about it. If you believe, if you have believed at any point in the history of watching baseball, whether you've been watching it for 3 years, 3 seconds, 30 years, 50 years, that the players on your favorite team were healthy 100% every day, and the only time they weren't healthy is when they were on the disabled list, then you've been fooling yourselves for a long time. I might as well have been just have told you that there's no Easter Bunny or Santa Claus, because they're not. They're tweaks. There's aches. There's pains. There's a difference between being banged up, being sore, being a little hurt, and being disabled. And I think right now, I don't think any of the players are necessarily disabled. And going for an MRI, whether it be Dom Smith's quad or Jay Bruce's plantar fasciitis or Lagares' hamstring, is just good proper precaution. So let's not freak out about that yet. Certainly some injuries that bear watching, especially Bruce with plantar fasciitis this early. That's a debilitating injury that pretty much takes him out of action. I mean, there's nothing you can do when you have that. And a kid, it could really alter a career. It's a big part of what's happened to Albert Pujols as a player. So a lot of good stuff. Again, I keep saying this over the last couple of weeks, you can't not be positive right now. And to me, that's a good thing over Mets camp. Now, before we get to Mike Vaccaro, who will join us in just a minute, there's been some new rules changes with pace of play. And we'll get into it with Mike. And I don't really have any problem with them limiting the visits to the mound. At some point, it's like you have to be able to put accountability on the catcher and the pitcher to speed up their process, to speed up their routine. Yes, you are paying these guys to be perfect, to execute. Sometimes slowing things down, which is what anybody's going to tell you. When you're in trouble, when you're an athlete, when you're feeling under pressure, try to slow the game down. Sometimes slowing it down to a crawl is just as bad as speeding up too much, in my opinion. And if this means that they're limiting visits to the mound where they have to count, and just to go through it, it looks like if a pinch hitter's been announced, that's not going to count for a visit for the mound. It doesn't look like in between innings there's going to be any counts for a visit. This is just like, hey, timeout. Catcher's got to go out to the mound. Hey, timeout. Dave Island, the pitching coach, is going to go out and talk to the pitcher. Hey, timeout, you know, so on and so forth. Maybe what this will do, we'll just basically put the pitching coach or the manager in the position with, let's just go yank the pitcher. Like, if he's in trouble, I know sometimes talking to him helps maybe slow things or work on a mechanical adjustment or things of that nature. But reality is, I think a lot of times they're just trying to bide some time for the bullpen. It's going to make bullpen management, it's going to make the in-game decision-making a little trickier, and that's why I'm glad the Mets have really made this move with some forward-thinking, younger, smarter, more multifaceted coaches. I'm telling you, you have just seen in the last couple of weeks how badly run the Mets have been. I'm sorry, badly run. But anyway, I'm belaboring that point. You have the pace of play change. I have no problem with the mound visits. The pitch clock, you know, they're not going into that yet. I think inevitably they're going to have something there. What really is going to have an impact, and baseball is going to have to make this conscious decision, with the way the game has evolved, where hitters are working counts, where pitchers and the signs and all the technology, you have to be much more careful with how you disseminate information if you're the catcher or the pitcher, where there's defensive positioning, you know, a lot more home runs, a lot more walks, things that slow the game down. A home run slows the game down because you got to trot around the bases and, you know, really reset. With all that stuff, the real impact will be getting the 20 seconds that they've reduced the commercials in between innings, whether it be a national game or a local game. I think it'll have a big impact. And I think ultimately what they have to think about doing is the screen-on-screen type of advertising. I am fully aware of the impact and the value and the dollars being spent to advertise during Major League Baseball games, and I understand that those dollars, if they go away, impacts the pie that both the owners and the players are enjoying. Remember, the revenues from commercial advertising is what fuels big free agent contracts. There is a way to get your brand across in an appropriate fashion and still keep the game going. And this is going to be also something that will drive baseball purists nuts. But rather than miss first pitches or cut out quickly or what have you, there was, and I believe it was a Major League Baseball game. It might not have been. Maybe it was an NBA game. I can't remember what I was watching. But there was a game that they were doing screen and screen. It was like a split screen. You're still able to watch the action. Obviously, you were not hearing the announcers, but you had the commercial to the right, and it was running. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily what a company's brand wants. Does it want to be a disruptor in the middle of the action? Is that going to annoy the viewer of Major League Baseball? Yeah, it will. It will annoy them, but it keeps the game going. And I think you get to the point where you listen to these commercials, and you could probably memorize every single SNY commercial. By the second week of the season, you'll know pretty much all the big advertisers of SNY. They'd have been embedded in your brain by very quickly into the season. Have them run, you know, commercial. Even if it's in between batters, I don't need to hear the walk-up music all the time. I love Gary, Keith, and Ron. I love Keith stories. But if you have to kind of just, you know, fade into a commercial for 30 seconds while that hitter is walking up or that pitching coach is making a visit to the mound, funny that I bring that up with all that's going on, or whatever, you certainly have that, and that will probably reduce or potentially allow them to reduce it even more. Get it down to about 2 minutes in between innings. In, out, in, out. When you guys go out and you play softball or you play in your rec leagues, it's in, out, in, out. You know, off the field, on the field, off the field, on the field. Yeah, I know there's no pitching visits to the mound. I know it's a completely different situation, but that's ultimately what holds games up. When you start not on time, when you drag in between innings, and that's the problem with the pace of play. Everything else they're trying to do, you know, proposing seven-inning games or, you know, making sure you could only have a certain amount of pitchers in a game, or, oh, let's have this cute idea. Let's make the team that's down in the ninth inning bat whoever they want, because that'll make up for a slow game and the fans will get excited, because, you know, back in 1999 and 2000, it would always be Mike Piazza in a big spot. Come on. It would always be Yoenis Cespedes up if the Mets are down. It would always be Ahmed Rosario. It'll always be Todd Frazier. Well, that's silly. I understand, and Mike Vaccaro wrote about this, and we'll get to him, and I'll wrap up here, about how the NBA has changed the three-point shot, and the NFL added the two-point conversion, and hockey changed its rules to a certain degree when they had issues with scoring. But really, to me, baseball is very simple. That's what makes it great. That's what, you know, you can make changes to division alignment. You can make changes maybe by adding nuances to the rules. But fundamentally changing how the game is played, to me, there's a problem there. Changing a seven-inning game is like taking the NBA and making it two quarters instead of four. It's like turning the NFL from a 15-minute quarters to a 10-minute quarters. Or, you know, I know they've moved the kickoff where it starts when there's a touchback, but It's like shortening the field. Like, to me, it just does not make sense. And that is a drastic solution to what is a much simpler problem, which is figure out how to continue the commercialization and the revenue while not getting the game dragged out to the point where the commercials are so burned in your head that's where the boredom sets in. That's why you flick away and you get interested in something else while the game is going on. So anyway, let's take a break. When we return, Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post will join us. Let's hear his take on these topics and others. And we'll hear from him. And then later on, I'll wrap up and get into what's next and the schedule and all that fun stuff. We'll be right back with Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post right after this.
We are going to see the pace of play initiatives for the 2018 season. This is MLB Commissioner Robert Manfred saying, I'm pleased that we were able to reach an understanding with the Players Association to take concrete steps to address pace of play with the cooperation of players. My strong preference is to continue to have ongoing dialogue with players on this topic to find mutually acceptable solutions. So, first and foremost, let's just say right off the bat, there is not going to be a pitch clock. So we're not going to see that in 2018, but we're going to walk you through the initiatives here one by one so that you have an understanding of what you will see in 2018. And we're going to start with the mound visits. So mound visits without a pitching change shall be limited to 6 per team per 9 innings. For any extra innings played, each club shall be entitled to 1 additional non-pitching change mound visit per inning. So, Harold, let's start there. I mean, your thoughts here just on the fact that, A, we're going to enforce these pace of play initiatives, and then your thoughts on the mound business.
Well, one, the commissioner had the right to enforce whatever he wanted to. He wanted to get an agreement with the players. He didn't want to go out there being the guy that forced something on them. So he worked it out. The pitch clock was a big sticking point for everybody. But that's still not on the table right now, although he said things are still negotiable. That may be something you look at the following year where, again, he's going to have that power to go ahead and enforce the rules that he was looking at for next year. A manager or coach trip to the mound to meet with the pitcher. The player leaving his position to confer with the pitcher and the pitcher leaving the mound to confer with another player. That is constituted as a visit. So, in other words, stay in your position, stay off my mound, keep the game going. All right, that's one. Now, these are not mound visits, and I think this is how smart they got with the rules. Discussing between pitchers and position players in normal course of play that does not cause a player to relocate. All right, so don't just frivolously, you know how they hold up the hand and say, go talk to him?
Right.
They're not stalling the game for that, for somebody to warm up. Player cleaning his spikes on the mound under rainy conditions, or a lot of times you put a lot of water on the field with mud on their spikes. Here's why this is important, is that it could be used as a stall tactic. For the most part, all those tools are sitting on the mound. With the tongue that you can use to dig dirt out of your spikes,
yep.
Those are on the mound. They're not sitting out in the infield.
Right.
So a guy goes in there to do that, he's down on the knee cleaning it up, and you're in and out. You can try to get tricky, but the umpires are smarter than that. So I think that was important. They looked at the game, and one of the things the players wanted was to not disrupt the flow of baseball. So I think with this, they keep the real flow of the baseball game intact. They kept the traditional mound visits, but they've eliminated what people got irritated with, was the catcher going out a million times. And if he wasn't, then a position player was. So that's been the big change, and it's going to affect the game, how it moves on.
We're back, and joining us is Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. You guys know him over on Twitter, at Mike Vac, and we're going to have some fun here. Mike, pleasure to have you on the program. So with the NBA season here in New York turning to utter nonsense, let's say, or total garbage, Rick Nash getting traded from the Rangers, the football season never really started. Is there any better time than for New York fans and for a columnist like yourself to start hearing the sounds of the crack of the bat and spring training?
That couldn't be more accurate, Mike. I'll tell you what. I'm down in Florida now, and it's amazing. Just hanging around for breakfast around the hotel where a lot of Mets fans come, on vacations and whatnot. I was overhearing so much baseball chatter, and you think opening day was 5 days away as opposed to like almost a month away, but I'm certain the Yankee fans are the same way. It's just it's one of those times. It's a baseball town. We like to give it its recognition whenever the other sports are kind of taking their turn on the stage. But New York is a baseball town, always has been, and especially in this year, it's never turned its eyes more longingly toward the sport, no matter which side of town you're on.
What's interesting is that you have the, a lot of the discussion about the game itself, the length of the game, some new rules about visits to the mound have been put in place. You hear all sorts of things about, maybe the game is stale. Maybe they need to do things like Institute, and you wrote about this earlier in the week. You could have anybody bat in the ninth inning, a seven-inning game. There's been so many different things over the last couple of years that have been thrown out there for, I guess, consumption. And I don't know if they're trial balloons or if they're real. And I know in your piece you talked about how the NBA has been progressive and the NFL has been progressive, whether it be the three-point line, the, you know, the two-point conversion. But somehow those things, which may have seemed crazy back when they came out, really don't seem all that crazy. Anytime you want to tinker with baseball, as a long-term baseball fan, it just it doesn't feel right. Maybe this is how people felt about the DH back in the 70s, but it just doesn't feel right to me.
You know what, Mike, even the DH, though, I'm still no fan of the DH. I'd rather see it disappear. But the DH is a rule it's still kind of within the context of the sport. You know, I mean, you can explain it, you know, it's logical, even if it's not necessarily, you know, a perfect rule. I mean, the notion of a pitcher not hitting, you know, you can explain that away in the context of lineups and just the way the game is played. You know, does baseball need to be tweaked? Of course it does. I mean, look, I think there was a lot of outrage last year when they did away with intentional walks, and, you know, I think the sport survived. That's the kind of stuff. If it's instituted, it still makes sense within the context of the rules. It's just some of the other stuff. I mean, the shortening of the game. But I've heard now people talk about, you know, three pitch walks and two pitch strikeouts, which I think is absurd. But you know, the two things that really kind of just drive me crazy is the one you referenced, which is the one that came out this week, which probably got more attention than it deserved. But that's part of the appeal of baseball, is that, you know, baseball causes people to have conversations about things, even in the middle of February, which was, you know, the idea that you can send anybody you want up in the ninth inning, regardless of what the batting order says. And the other thing that drives me nuts is the idea of a man on second in the 11th inning, because, you know, and part of why that bothers me is not just the illogical nature of it, but, you know, baseball is the only sport that I know of that tries to say you want less of our product, not more. You know, I have to be honest with you. I went to a lot of games when I was a kid. I never once complained to my father, my God, it's too long. Let's go home. Let's leave the ballpark today. You know, and I get it. Kids today aren't the way I was when I was 8, 9 years old. But I still think, you know, I look around the ballpark, I still see a lot of engaged kids. You know, maybe sometimes they're on their phones also. But, you know, I don't know that pace of play is as egregious. It's an issue. Yes, we all want shorter games. We want faster pace more than anything else. But I just don't know that it's a reason to have so many of these brain inspirations, I guess, for lack of a better word, that I just don't think, you know, are very helpful in solving the problem.
And you know what, Mike, I agree with you, and I definitely think that as the game gets more complicated, and you think about the NFL, you think about the NBA, you know, sometimes you need a master's degree to figure out defenses in the NFL and the NBA with analytics and schemes. It's complicated. I don't know if the average fan really understands or can articulate the defensive 3-second rule. Baseball's simpler. I think even with the positioning of the outfielders, the pitching changes, maybe the different signs or how pitchers now, this is their livelihood, are taking a step back and saying, okay, what do I want to do here? The real conundrum for the league is commercialization. If you shorten, and they're not going to do that, you shorten the commercials, you got things going in between innings quicker, there's millions of dollars at stake. Now, what some fans have said, and I think they tweet, I don't know if it was an NBA game or an MLB game, you do that kind of screen and screen with the commercials, perhaps, and maybe that helps.
Right.
And splits the baby in two, so to speak. But that's the real rub here, I believe. And that's the thing that nobody wants to touch, because it's revenue. But I think that's where this all goes. It is, I mean, how many times, Mike, if you watch a game, if you're not at the ballpark, you could memorize the commercial sequence inning after inning. And I don't know how many of those products you buy, but you know about them. And I think that's where this all comes into play, the speed and the time and whatnot.
Sure, you know, every 4 years we all get interested in the World Cup, right? And those games aren't interrupted by commercial breaks because they're, you know, segments of the game are sponsored by, you know, whoever, and British Airways or whatever. And, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I guess I'm not, I won't play myself off as some kind of advertising expert to understand, like, you know, what the impact is between a full-blown commercial and, you know, a sponsorship crawl at the bottom of the screen. Although, as somebody who, you know, when you DVR something, never watches one commercial ever, I would think it might be more beneficial to have your sponsorships actually during the, you know, field of play. And certainly you have that stuff, you know, going on now with billboards that are visible on TV, the stuff behind the plate that's visible on TV. But right now, that stuff is all supplemental to the baseline advertising. And you're right. I mean, the problem is when you start messing with advertising or suggesting that commercials can be shorter, that kind of stuff, now you're talking about the bottom line. And suddenly when you're talking about the bottom line to baseball people, pace of play doesn't seem quite so important. And look, I get it. You got to pay the bills. You know, I mean, you know, ball players don't play for room and board anymore. I mean, they play for, you know, they play for millions and millions of dollars, and somehow you have to generate revenue. I get that. But, you know, when you're talking about altering the very nature of the way the game is played, that's when I think you have to really, you know, take a deep breath, take a step back and say, you know, what are we really doing here?
I have with me Mike Vaccaro, New York Post, at Mike Vac on Twitter. Obviously, a good follow. Check him out at the New York Post. I know all the talk is about the Yankees, you know, and your paper even is already naming how, you know, what are they going to call the new murderer's row. But I'll tell you what, you know, the Mets have obviously question marks and things could go horribly wrong. But you pointed out a couple of weeks back, they have a couple of interesting cornerstones. You have Yoenis Cespedes, you have Noah Syndergaard. And, you know, this is a team that went to the World Series just a couple of years ago. Again, a lot of ifs. I know things could go bad. I know they have warts. But somehow, and I think this will be beneficial to them, what's going on with the Yankees, with all the hype, and how everybody's pretty much forgotten about these young arms and has written them off, it may play in their favor. Providing that, like you said, you have the two big guys, the big pitcher, the big hitter, and can they stay healthy? Can they be focused? Can they perform?
Yeah, you know, I have two thoughts about that, Mike. One, I mean, and you're right. I mean, I did write about this a couple of weeks ago regarding Syndergaard and Cespedes. I mean, these are guys that a year ago were legitimate candidates, you know, in legitimate talks to say, well, who's going to win the Cy Young Award this year? Who's going to win the MVP this year? I mean, and, you know, those are two guys who are in both conversations. And basically, they were both gone for the bulk of the year. Syndergaard, all of it, you know, Cespedes for half, but it was more than that because he was playing hurt even though, you know, most of the time that he was there. And look, I mean, it's no coincidence you lose to impactful players like that, you're going to have a struggle of the year. So really, in a lot of ways, it makes sense. Maybe 70-92 is a little to the extreme of what you might have thought even without out, but it was easy to forget during the long slog of that season that, you know, by the way, we're missing our two most important players. And so I think that's something to consider when you're thinking about the Mets this year. Also, you know, the other point I was going to make is, and you make a good point about this also, is that, you know, there always tends to be a conversation every couple of years, well, are the Mets going to be able to take back the town for the Yankees? And look, I'm as guilty as that as anybody. I love pluming that as a subject matter. It's a great talker no matter when, because Mets fans are always going to say, yeah, it's going to be our town next year or whatever. And certainly it seemed like the Mets were inching toward that in the last couple of years, although I don't think they ever quite got there. But the point being that there is some value to being able to play a little bit in the shadows and to be, you know, it's to not have every expectation, every burden placed on your shoulders. I thought the 16 Mets actually did a remarkable job given the fact, you know, they were trying to live up to the expectations of a dream ride the year before and still managed to make the playoffs despite basically having, you know, 2.5 healthy pitchers the last 2 months of the season. And last year, obviously they fell flat for a lot of different reasons, but I do think there's a value for the Mets now. I mean, you know, all this attention is going to be played on the Yankees, and, you know, maybe they'll win 110 games like everybody expects, and maybe they'll hit 1,000 home runs like everybody expects, and there'll be this great baseball minstrel show like everybody expects, and that's fine. But the Mets can also do their business now and not have every eyeball attached to them and have every question every time they lose a tough 4-3 game in the ninth. And maybe that'll help them. I do think the making of that team, you know, you don't necessarily want to strive to be the second banana in town, but it's maybe not a bad thing to not have that much of a burden, you know, placed on you the way it was the last couple of years in the Yankees. You know, now that the Yankees are back to being the Yankees in terms of attention and expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the thing that remains is the Yankees have been around since the beginning pretty much of the league. They're always going to be historical. The Mets are a newer team. They're a spawn of the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. And look, if the Brooklyn Dodgers were still around and the Mets never came to play, they very well may be looked at in that historical, iconic sense in that way. I know what happened in the 80s, and I was very young when I watched those teams. But the Yankees still were popular. I mean, George was still running amok around. You still had Winfield and Mattingly. I don't know if the Mets ever really took the town. I don't know if they ever can take the town. I agree with you. It's a fun baseball debate. I don't know if it really matters. And I think it matters to Mets fans who are insecure. Yankee fans don't like being told they're not number one. And at the end of the day, if we really did a scientific poll, which may be impossible, you probably have a certain amount of Mets fans that are hardcore fans, a certain amount of Yankee fans that are hardcore fans. They're probably rather even. And then you have the people that say, you know, I just like going to a baseball game and I'll fling back and forth. I really believe that. Can't prove it, but I really believe that that's the fabric of the baseball fan here in New York.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that too. I do think that both teams have their fervent supporters, and then there's a pretty sizable amount that goes back and forth. And I think that's where we have the argument or the question or the whatever you want to call it about who owns the town. It's basically who owns those, 45% in the middle. We don't really have a strong allegiance one way or the other. But you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, look, if the Mets had won the World Series in 2015, they wouldn't have cared if they were considered the owners of the town or not, because they would have been the owners of the Commissioner's Trophy, and that's really, at the end of the day, all that really matters.
What do you think of Mickey Callaway? Look, I know everything. If you can't be positive right now, and you can't have positive stories in all 30 camps, then you're never going to be positive at any point. You hear a lot of good things. I know he had his first little storm there. Well, actually, he has Ted, too. First with the Donald Trump Jr. thing, and then with Dom Smith and how he handled that, and whether or not the Mets handled the PR part of it completely clean is a debate, I guess, that'll be ongoing, considering that the same people who run the PR have been there for 1,000 years. So, but you see a lot of good signs with Mickey Callaway. He's a little bit more of a modern, fresh voice. I was talking to a non-baseball fan the other day that I was with, and she was like, "Who's that?" I'm like, "That's the Mets manager." Like, really? Like, after 7 years of watching me watch Terry Collins, she's like, "That's the Mets manager?" That's my wife, by the way. So, anyway, she didn't know that was. She was impressed, but she's heard me complain about Terry Collins far too often. So, anyway, again, I know it's early, and how can we not feel good now? But any initial thoughts? You're down in Florida. I'm sure you're going to have a chance to interact with him at some point as well, if you haven't already.
Well, Mike, the one thought I have is I'm not sure how you're going to replace all of your time and spend the last 7 years hyperventilating at Terry Collins's various
shenanigans. It was so frustrating, and I have nothing personal against the guy. I just have a very high standard for managers, and I've said this to you.
Right.
I think what I got ruined is at 15 years old, I'm watching the Knicks and Pat Riley, and I really respect what Riley has done. And when you start at a young age watching sports with that, everything else felt – kind of falls in comparison. It falls second to banana in comparison, really.
No, I know. Yeah, I'm joking, although not quite, because you obviously had your – look, I would dare say most Mets fans had a real issue with the way Terry Collins managed the team the last 7 years. And, I mean, it was almost like, we were all kind of looking at each other like, they really got the World Series on this guy, really? I mean, I will say this in fairness to Callaway. I think that he's going to have growing pains also. I think that you can be an incredibly established and efficient guy in one area of the business, as he was as a pitching coach, but you're still going to have to learn on the job how to be a manager. And I do get the sense that maybe the Mets, and he thought he might have overdone the kumbaya aspect of his personality at his opening press conference and his opening statements, and I don't think he's necessarily going to be the old school tough guy that I think was what Terry Collins' persona was. But I do think, I don't think it was a hard decision for him to take Dom Smith out of the lineup the other day, but I do think it was the right decision, and it was pretty clear that was the only decision he had to make. So it wasn't like he had to ponder what to do, the right thing to do there. So I think that's an encouraging sign, and I do think that Smith is. He's so chasing, and now he's such a part of the team that he's hurt now. So he learned his lesson. But I do think that, for the first few weeks and months of the season, will there be some times when you scratch your head over things Mickey Callaway does? I'm sure there are. It's a picture of the job anyway. I mean, Tony La Russa in his last weeks was probably being second-guessed by a lot of Cardinals fans, even as he was polishing up his Hall of Fame statue. So the nature of the game, and it's not a job that's anywhere near as easy as it seems to be to the casual observer, as you well know. But I do think that does seem to have the proper skill sets, to borrow an old Mets term, and I think it's important. And I think Aaron Boone's got the same thing. I mean, it's really curious. I mean, it's hard to imagine to remember it in New York, where two of the biggest question marks were the two managers. You know, because it's been a while since we've had guys who are who are new on the job. And I think you can have the same questions with Aaron Boone. I think Aaron Boone's probably got a few more resources, and maybe some of his early mistakes will be hidden by, you know, what we assume will be some 8 and 9 run onslaughts that maybe the Mets won't have. But I do think that, it's the same thing for both sides of town. I mean, learning how to manage is, you know, the hardest part of being a manager. And I think the only way, you know, it's kind of like everything else. You know, it's all about reps. And I think Mickey Callaway needs his reps. And, you know, you're only going to get a certain amount of those in spring training games. So it's going to be a lot of on-the-job training for him, I think, for Aaron Boone also.
Yeah, and I think both of them have learned pretty quickly that communication. And look, you remember the media and whether, you know, the value of what you're doing is for entertainment. Some of it is obviously, a large part of it is journalism, but it's sports. You know, we're not covering the White House. There is an entertainment value. There are narratives that get pushed. I think both these guys understand they have to control that. I think the teams, especially the Yankees, understand that. Will be interesting to see how much rope they each get, who gets more rope, because both of them are talkers so far, you could tell, Boone and Callaway. So you're going to get a bite. How that plays out if the Yankees start out 4-8, if the Mets at the end of April are 7 games behind and looking lethargic again, and they're running the bases poorly again, and Matt Harvey stinks again, that will be interesting. I think Callaway may get a little more rope than Boone. But who knows? I mean, maybe not, because everyone's just going to assume, well, it's only a matter of time before the Yankees get out of this because of the sluggers. It'll be very interesting to see that.
I hear on that, Mike, but I agree that Callaway's going to get more ropes because, you know, right now you look at the two teams, I mean, the Yankees are just about everybody's, not just Verlander's, but just about everybody's pick to win the World Series, even, you know, just Verlander and Vegas, I guess, the two outliers. I guess those are two big ones, but... the Mets right now, I think even the most optimistic Mets fan is going to concede that, well, they're not going to concede the division to the Nationals, and if you can concede the Nationals right now are a better team. So it would take, you know, a special year along the line of 2015 to unseat them. And so what their goal right now is to try and just get in the playoffs, which is certainly, I think, a reasonable goal. But I do think the entering expectations will say that if both teams stumble out of the gate 5-10, it's going to be the Yankees around which the scrutiny is going to, you know, get a little tighter. Fairly or unfairly, that's just the way I think it's going to be. George Steinbrenner hasn't been a part of the equation for some time, and yet it seems like, you know, a lot of Yankees fans have been granted his impatience in absentia. And as a result, that's why when the Yankees are struggling, it seems like Armageddon is approaching. And I realize that Mets fans are just as exacting as Yankees fans. It's just that I do think that trying to manage expectations this year. Plus, I mean, when you're coming off a year like last year, I just think that any kind of gradual improvement is going to be embraced by the fan base. Even if they still remain angry over the way the Mets did things in the offseason, or if there is this, we should have gotten this, we should have gotten that done, I think that the primary core of Mets fan is still going to be willing to be patient in terms of results as long as there is a notable and gradual improvement of what we saw last year. And I think that's kind of a low bar to actually be able to surpass.
So you got two teams you're covering. You're down in Florida. What are the two or three big stories that we could expect out of you? I don't know how long you're going to be down there, but just give an idea to the listeners what you're looking at, because obviously there's some very interesting storylines here, not just the managers, not just Giancarlo Stanton. There's a lot of other things I think at play, and I'm sure you'll find some because you always do. So give us an idea what you're looking at over the next week or 2 weeks, however long you're down there.
Well, I know that I definitely got lucky because the three days I'm going to be covering from Port St. Lucie, which is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm not sure what the order is, but I know that Syndergaard's DeGrom and Harvey are going to start those three games. I'm not sure which order it is. So I would imagine that at some point, maybe all points, I'll be writing about pitching because despite, you know, everything that the Mets have tried to do in terms of revamping their lineup, they've made a team that's probably going to be, you know, bound wherever they're going based on how on not only the health but the performance of the pitching staff. I mean, I'm especially intrigued to see what Noah Syndergaard looks like this year and see him against live hitters for the first time essentially since last April. So I think it's going to be pretty pitching heavy. Over at the Yankees, I mean, see, you know, it's interesting. See, everybody from day one, and you're right, we started this T-shirt contest or this slogan contest, whatever it is, you know, to name the team. And that's all fun. You know, it's all good fun. I don't necessarily – like, I mean, Giancarlo Stanton had a monster year last year, and now we're talking about how he, you know, changed his stance and so forth, and that helped him do this. And that's great. It's what, that was the first time in his career when he surpassed 40, you know, 40, let alone 50 home runs. So it'll be interesting to see how he does that. I'm curious about Judge. I mean, I know that Judge has talked about how it was the shoulder that kind of kept him from, you know, the crazy high pace he was in for a while and put him into a slump. But he's also a guy, he's a second-year player, you know. I mean, can you really expect 50 home runs every year from this guy? So it's going to be very interesting to see how these two guys, you know, play with each other. Now, obviously, look, I mean, both guys can hit the ball to right field, and in Yankee Stadium, that's a wonderful skill to have. So that might, overcome any, you know, whatever kind of thing they're going to have to, you know, learn how to do in terms of playing with each other and playing with expectations. But I really do think that that's fascinating. But I also think what's fascinating is that lineup around them. I mean, I do think that it's a strong enough, deep enough lineup where, you know, you can endure the kind of slump that Judge went through last year and the kind of slump that Stanton will never really go through because he's gone through one every year. And I'm especially interested in guys like Gregorius, who, you know, was probably their best player last year, and it was only after he went 4-for-4 again that you said to yourself, you know, he's pretty good. And a guy like that, and I think Greg Bird is, you know, maybe quietly be the guy who winds up with the biggest advantage because he's got all the protection in the lineup and he's got you know, his natural power stroke toward right field. So those are the things that really interest me.
Listen, if anyone follows you, the last thing for you, follow Sandy Alderson when he's walking your dog and ask him a question, because that still, to me, is one of the best best stories. And those who don't know it, go look it up. You'll find it. So, Mike, be well. I know you're a little under the weather. Thank you for grinding through it. And we'll catch up as the season goes on. And thanks so much again.
Always good talking to you, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post, and if you guys have followed him, and I guess it was about 2 years ago or a year ago when he was trying to ask Sandy Alderson a question that Sandy didn't like, and basically he says, "I'm walking my dog as Golden Retriever." I guess he was relieving himself out in the back over at Citi Field. So anyway, good stuff from Mike. A lot of stuff to chew on. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up. Final thoughts, some reaction to the Mike Vaccaro interview right after this.
Hey Mets fans, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. MetsMerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to MetsMerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com. Right now, that's Mets, MERIZED, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
That's a great segment by Mike Vaccaro, and always appreciate him being on. Some really interesting stuff. We're pretty much on the same page with a lot of different things. So really find that to be one of our better guests that we have on. We always have Mike on once or twice a year. So that'll be that. So what's next? I'm going to continue to update everybody from Port St. Lucie, trying to get the best and the brightest that are down there. There's actually now with The Athletic and the Newsday, I think, hiring some new beat reporters. I'm going to try to see if how accessible these new guys are, maybe have them pop on the show at some point. It's good to see a little bit fresh blood on the Mets beat. I think that's a good thing too. I think they needed that badly. As much as the team needed some fresh blood in the coaching staff, it's always good to mix up the beat. It's been a transition because of some of the big departures over the last couple of years with Adam Rubin leaving and so on and so forth. But we always have our old reliables. Of course, we're trying to, you know, get our friend Kevin Kernan on. He's been doing a great job for the New York Post down in Port St. Lucie. Our friend Rich Catino, he has his show on Sunday nights. I know he's been down in Port St. Lucie, did a nice one-on-one with Jay Bruce. You can check that out. So more to come, and really just trying to analyze and look at where the team is at. Right now it's just too early to break things down. The real, like I said in the open, the real story here is setting the tone and the culture. And I think the coaching staff has done an outstanding job with that, like I told Mike, and I agree with him. You know, there's definitely something to be said for what's been going on with this team in the last couple of years. So it's really nice to have a different type of atmosphere and feel good about this team. Now it's about going out there and performing. It's nothing more than that. So anyway, we'll be back next week, and stay tuned for more action here from the Talking Mets podcast. It may even, you know, depending on the availability of some of our friendly neighborhood beat reporters and columnists down in Florida, maybe even pop in the show a Grapefruit Roundup in the middle of the week. So keep going to my Twitter feed at Mike Silva Media and check it out and be able to give you the latest update on that. But we're out of time. I want to thank Mike Vaccaro for coming on. Check him out on Twitter at Mike Vac. Check him out at the New York Post. Of course, you can check me out all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Like I said, send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, and now at our buddies, The Grueling Truth, which is also available on the iHeart Media Network, iHeart Radio. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great rest of the Sunday. See you soon.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.